This is Dr. Lana Love.
This is Detective David Love.
Welcome to our show. Today, we're very happy to have a special guest, George Neo, with us from Victoria, Australia. And we're going to be talking about sustainability and an eco-village, which is proposed to be built in Armidale, which we may be joining later on.
That's right, yep.
There's so
lots of talks going on, lots of big stuff happening, and we're very excited to have George Neo on our show today. Welcome, George.
Hello.
George?
I'm here.
Can you hear us?
Yes, I can hear you, and the Neo
Great.
Part of it's nothing extraordinary.
It sounds really good. I have to say, the red pill or the blue pill.
Right.
George, very happy that you're able to make it with us today. Now, I've only just received your bio, but I do know that you've done an extraordinary transition from the corporate world, where you, I believe, were an electrical engineer, to
right.
Now you're a yoga instructor and, dare I say, spiritual warrior.
Nice, I love it.
Yeah,
good
with
term.
The magpie house, it looks like the center that you've created has a whole lot of workshops and yoga and other, venues to educate people about alternative future ways of living. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's pretty much it. It was a 30-year electronics engineering career, which I really enjoyed and was quite rewarding. We had our own businesses, had trips to the States and back, and we were on the cutting edge of technology. And one day I decided, well, this isn't real for me anymore. I need to do something different. And the remarkable thing was that the universe agreed with me. A few days later, I got a redundancy notice. And I was the happiest person alive because I was going to be paid up until Christmas. And the problem was everybody else was miserable because they lost their jobs. But this is exactly where the path I wanted to take.
Oh, really?
It's funny how that works. You think it's something bad and it ultimately turns out to be something to your benefit and something that's for your higher calling.
Well, I was becoming more and more at odds with the corporate world.
Right,
like many of us. Yeah.
Right.
Understood.
I felt as though the work, even though I really loved it, was consuming me, and I decided, well, there's other things in life after nearly 30 years. I'm very grateful for the experience, and it was obviously time for me to move on. And more recently, I actually developed an ability to communicate through into the Akashic Records. It actually told me that if I hadn't have moved when I did, they would have had to take more drastic action to get me out.
Wow.
Instead of hitting you on the head with a pebble, they hit you with a boulder. I know that one.
Now, George, I don't think I've interviewed many spiritual people that have been engineers, because engineers are, I guess, thought...
pragmatic and systematic, kind of like private detectives. I was in the legal industry as a legal investigator, as a private detective for 20 years, and I sort of had a similar experience where I'm grateful for what I did and I learned a lot from it, but I sort of got sort of hit by the universe as well and had my own awakening, so I understand where you're coming from.
Goodness, we've got a strange sound here.
Hang on, there's a terrible whistle coming through for some reason. Oh, it's gone away.
Okay.
Great.
Sorry.
So, George, can I ask you, have you always been a spiritual person or have you had an awakening?
I think it's quite ingrained inside me, even as a child. I remember watching a little bit of TV now and again, and when the ads used to come on, I used to say, that's a load of bullshit, right? The advertising wasn't really based on a benevolent idea of providing services. It's based upon profit, and that was basically one of the odds I was having with the corporate world, even from a young age. And so I didn't fit into that system.
Right, you saw right through it.
Yeah, I followed. followed by Spirit of the Heart.
Oh, that's wonderful. Can you tell us about Magpie House?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, Magpie House was established soon after I exited the corporate world. And it's based on the idea that everything that we do and everything that we create is based on a vision or a thought. And if somehow that vision or thought is flawed, then everything below it is flawed. And Magpie House is driven mainly by my intense curiosity and the unexplainable about the universe. And there's lots of material we can access from that. And we've created this space with multiple events, the yoga school. The spiritual cinema itself is a very powerful tool for awakening consciousness. And that, even that was verified for us by the initial group of Westerners that went to the Himalayas in the 1890s, right? Now, when they went to the Himalayas, the spiritual masters there were showing them video and audio using thought forms, right? And what the master said, well, is pretty soon you're going to do the same thing but using photographic and mechanical means, which is obviously cinema and movies. Mm-hmm. It's actually a very powerful tool, but it is a... It's like a ladder, like the rungs on a ladder. Our journey is to master the material first before we can elevate ourselves into the spiritual. You can't skip
the ladder. That's interesting. I remember you saying that before.
Well, you gotta walk before you can run.
Yeah.
So that's, it's been a very powerful tool. Plus, the internet is a very powerful tool.
Mm.
The World Wide Web. It's been free up until, I think they're trying to take control of it because they've realised their mistake about making it totally, absolutely free.
Oh, and all these advertisements are popping up all the time. It's awful.
We can't have anything for free. There's got to be a way to make money on everything.
George, I believe that you're now a yoga instructor.
Yeah, that was part of the journey.
Now, I've got some really interesting photographs of you in an amazing body contortion position. My goodness.
Oh, boy.
How do you do that?
I can relate to that because I just started getting into yoga over the last few months. I had a girl that showed it, brought me to a yoga class before I came, and I enjoy it a lot, so I respect what you're doing.
But you look like you're made of rubber.
Well, what I say about that is that anyone that does enough practice, any moron can tie themselves up in knots, right? My actual, my best teachers are actually my students, you know, and as I go along this journey, they teach me where and where not to go because, you know, I'm trying to provide the service. And I actually say to them that I am just a beginner. And they say, what? You're a beginner? And I say, yes. There's so much more for me to explore, you know, body, mind, spirit-wise. And if I make the assumption and make the announcement that I've mastered everything, then there's nowhere else to go.
Absolutely.
Hey, well, there's no beginning and no ending, right?
That's right. In the infinite expanse of the universe, there is, I know, virtually nothing. And so does everyone else. It's only the people that think they know what's going on and think they know they've got it all figured out. And that's when they create problems.
Yeah, I call it the law of expanding consciousness. It means there's nothing but growth. So,
George, you were telling me... really something really interesting to me is because I'm a therapist, and I guess while I deal with conscious people, a lot of the time what we're doing is dealing with the unconscious. But George, you were saying that the body, yoga and connecting with the body is so effective because the body never lies. And you were saying that, that was the interface between, you know, for us to evolve, if we're to go any further, we need to master the body domain because the body doesn't lie. Could you tell us a bit more about that?
Yeah, it's a very good subject. We imagine that if we can get into the spiritual realm, the mystical realm, that we can master our existence and become, maybe even become invincible. Well, it doesn't work like that. We are a three-part being, body, mind, and spirit. And even though we've got a lower nature, let's say the lower three chakras, and we've got a higher nature, the higher three chakras, energy centers, the lower ones are just as important as the higher ones. And the heart itself is like a gateway between your lower nature and your higher nature. Now, just because we call it lower, it doesn't make it any less significant. It needs to be looked after. The body itself has a direct link into the subconscious. The conscious realm, the realm of the mind and the ego, the mind can only process a few bits per second, right? The subconscious mind can process millions and millions of bits per second. It's a vast realm, and it also connects us deep into our humanity's origins, right back to the beginning of the human race, and it also connects us together at a deep level. And so,
do you mean like the collective unconscious?
Well, that might be like the Akashic Records too.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, by learning to communicate through the body into the subconscious, you've got access to that infinite intelligence that is within us all. Further with this, we're not here to master the mystical world, the unknown. We are here primarily to master the known world, the third dimensional. We're here to. We've chosen to be into this realm of limited existence, duality, and that's what we need to master before we are given the keys to go into the higher realms. Otherwise, we don't stand a chance.
No, which is the real challenge, because we were already there to begin with. So why come here and to learn about the spirit realm when that's where you came from? And in fact, the subconscious really is the spirit realm or the inner plane anyhow, so we have access.
That's what I'm saying. We need to develop superb physical condition before we have any chance to go into other dimensions, right? And yoga does that. There's also...
Oh, no, George, I don't think I can ever get into... the positions that you manage.
You've done well with it. I've seen you, you know.
You don't have to. That's just me having a bit of fun.
Oh, okay, right, good.
But, you know, there's lots of things we can all do to keep ourselves in shape.
I originally went to yoga just for the meditation, for the breathing, because the meditation that they had in this area where I live was just... they had a yoga class, and so that's where I started doing that, and it worked out well. I got the benefit of both, so.
Yeah. Well, the breathing and meditation are obviously very important. The meditation can be more difficult to access than a body meditation. And what's a body meditation? It's exercise. Mm-hmm. You know, we're all familiar with the idea that if we work the body, then we can experience a natural high. Runners actually report this as well, and sports people, that you know, they work the body to a very fine degree, and it takes them somewhere which is extremely satisfying to the soul, and that's part of the journey. Master the known physical realm, otherwise you won't stand a chance in the spiritual realm. I mean, it's very exciting to go to a psychic show and receive messages, but it's only part of the story. It's not complete. That makes sense?
It does, but it's interesting because I guess I tend to perhaps ignore the physical a little bit. I consider meditation to be sort of the ultimate, and I like the fact that yoga combines meditation with exercises for the body. But I must say, I think I'm a little bit condescending towards the body as being sort of the lower realm, and maybe that's my mistake. Maybe, and it sounds like what you're saying is very enlightening, that perhaps yoga would be the best way to enter this.
It might be because it's mind, body, and spirit, and they're all connected. So I guess
we're treating ourselves as a holistic being, right?
Yes.
We're a three-part being, and if we ignore the lower nature, we're not living a full human experience. And why did we make the choice to become human in the first place? It's and yoga, and also the shamanistic practice called magical passes.
Oh, right, Carlos Castaneda.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Is another way. Right? There's many ways to that, sure, to rise through those elements. The magical passes I also teach.
Tell us a bit about that. Sort of that magic do you teach?
It's movements.
Yeah, it's a method of shutting down the internal dialogue, right? That's how it's described in the shamanistic work, to shut down the internal dialogue, which is pretty much the same as the Eastern philosophy idea of quietening the mind. But, you know, it's a different way to access it.
Wow. I'd love to move on now and talk about the Ringing Cedars Ethiopian community and the books, the Ringing Cedars books that it's based on. Maybe what we should do now is, could you share your website, Magpie House, with the listeners?
Magpiehouse.com.au. We've also got the website yogaplex.com.au. They both reference each other. And you'll see a bunch of events there. We've just had a very powerful seminar, Prospering of the Awakened Heart, and I'll be putting videos up based on the seminars very soon.
Oh, fantastic. Oh, and how can viewers access the videos?
How do we access them?
Yes.
Yeah, look, I've got quite a collection, right, and I haven't got round to actually making them fully available at this stage, unless people subscribe to my YouTube channel.
I think I found a way around that, George. I've heard you on YouTube. I've put in George Neo, and I've actually listened to a really interesting talk that you had about about the technology and how that's taking over our world,
right,
and mobile phones,
yeah,
and all that.
Electrical radiation and radio wave radiation, which is polluting our world and our bodies and DNA. Yeah.
No, I managed to hear you on YouTube, so I think...
Well, that's another area we can possibly explore. Yesterday we had a bit of a discussion on some of the doomsday scenarios.
We can talk about that. I just want to quickly mention that our show Universal Soul Love also broadcasts on Dream Vision 7 Radio, and that'll be posted shortly. We'll have this show on that radio network as well. We're also on Blog Talk Radio and Liberated Syndication. And
I just look like we're going to have a music break, so we can sing for a little while. Your boat sent you down the stream. Merrily, 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 life's but a dream. Okay, yeah. That was our music break. All righty, George. Now, as you know, we are really interested in setting up an eco-village, and David and I have actually been visiting a number of eco-villages around Australia and looking into various possibilities. And, of course, when I, looked up what you've how much research you've put into it, it's been amazing, including not only finding the right land but finding the right model. And I believe that you've based that on the Ringing Cedars series of books that was written by a Russian entrepreneur. So maybe you could tell us a bit about that.
Yeah, it's not specifically tied to one philosophy. We didn't actually know about Ringing Cedars 6 months after we bought the land.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's true. But when we saw it, we thought, oh, what a great model. But it is based on quite a number of other philosophies going right back down into my childhood, I think. That's right. Because of my, let's say, my engineering background, I wouldn't want to launch into something without getting it pretty well defined and right from the start. In other words, I'm not satisfied with the idea of just running away to the hills just to seek refuge. I want to make sure that what's created has got some deep philosophy behind it and some purpose. Otherwise, we don't know what we're creating, and we could get into a bit of a mess.
Well, that makes sense. I really respect the fact that you've done that research, because I do believe, unfortunately, quite a few intentional communities have failed.
That's right.
So I guess having a very well-thought-out structure does make sense.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of good, well-established communities that have done quite well.
There are. We've seen a couple of them. Narara Village, and then Bundajin, and Crystal Rivers, and
Crystal Waters.
Yeah, right. We spent quite some time at Bundajin as well, and we spoke at the Intentional Communities Conference there, and I've got videos of that as well.
Oh, really?
Yeah, ours is, we've basically only got land based on the criteria that we initially came up with, and so it's like at the moment, and it has been for quite a while, it's like an unpainted canvas. What would a collective would like to reflect, to create? That's the approach that I'm sort of nurturing. Let's come up with a model before we plunge into something unknown. Because if we don't have a vision, then the action that ensues can become a nightmare. Right? And that's what I was saying right at the beginning, the aspect of what's based behind Magpie House is everything must be based on a vision or thought. And if that vision isn't right, then you're gonna create a nightmare. The three tools.
So tell us about the visions that do work. And of course, I guess you'd agree with us and so many other people that intentional communities may be the way forward in the future rather than big cities. Like intentional communities have that sort of, just the right number of people to not make it too big and too sort of overwhelming as a city is.
Yeah, a lot of the information, if you look into the conversation, in book number three, written by Neil Donald Walsh, it describes how highly evolved beings live in quite a bit of detail. Mm-hmm. And it talks about community, tribal sort of situations. It talks about big cities. And big cities is not a natural way for humans to live. They've never lived in, well, they have over history, but it tends to be self-destructive.
Right, we've certainly seen that, yeah.
You know, when a city gets too large, it becomes impersonal. You know, you can...
People become disconnected.
Yeah, you become...
I'm very much feeling that in Sydney.
Yeah, you can be in the midst of millions of people surrounding you, and yet you know nobody, you know, there's no support.
Absolutely.
Sure.
The fundamentals of that sort of system is based, at this time, it's based on financial transactions, and some people don't have finances to do to have a life where they're making a life and rather than just a living. Whereas the tribal type model, the highly evolved model, is not so large groups, which everybody interacts with each other and everybody supports the whole. And the humans will love that. Right? The humans love being in that self-supportive, nurturing, nurturing groups. Everybody's supported. And there's some great evidence and there's some great examples of this around the world, even today. But we can also go into the indigenous way of life, and that's the way they've always lived, right? And so if we're going to have a model, why don't we examine those things and objectively follow their example, perhaps?
So, George, what do you think, from the research you've done, what do you think would be, the important factors together for something like this to work?
Sorry.
What do you think would be the factors in an intentional community to put together?
What would make it a successful living, self-sustainable living community, I think, is a good question. Yeah.
Oh, I think the ideal vision will have multiple families. People have their private space, of course, but there's central facilities where everyone can interact. If you look into the highly evolved models, the children are always part of the collective rather than belonging to the biological parents, if that makes any sense. I mean, the biological
parents. It takes a village to raise a child, yeah. I think, is the old saying.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
that sounds good. A bit of backup support for the poor parents. I love that.
The children are the most important entity of the community, and the people that bear the children are not mature enough to raise them, right? They can be present and interact to all degrees, right? But it's the wise ones, it's the elders that we can give the highest task to raise the children. And the great advantage of that is the children then have a multitude of role models. I've often said that the nuclear family, the westernized nuclear family, is an absolute disaster.
I guess, George, what you're saying when you're talking about elders, we're talking about like grandparents and,
it sounds like the Aboriginal tribes, where we had Dilawarra on our show a couple of weeks ago.
And I actually got a very good a confirmation earlier this year when we showed a movie called The Mind-Body Connection, right? And it talked about how there's a mind-body connection and science has just discovered that. And I'm thinking, well, we've known about it for thousands of years.
Glad the scientists have just discovered it.
Yeah. In the movie,
it's like Columbus discovering America when the Native Americans were already there, you know.
Right, yeah. In the movie, it showed me an astounding scene. I was really blown away by it. And what it showed, there was a town in the US of A where there was no apparent incidence of chronic diseases. And they couldn't understand why, because it looked like another ordinary town. And so they went into the town and tried to research, why is this town different to every other town? Why is there no chronic diseases? What they discovered was, a lot of the families were Italian. I mean, that's not a definitive factor, but they were living multiple generations in a single household, mega household, and that was the difference. that the children, the aunties, the uncles, the grandparents, the great-grandparents even, were all interactive in these mega households. Right? And the humans then feel supported. They're part of a community, a collective. And it makes a huge difference. What they also discovered is, over time, these townspeople reverted back to a nuclear family situation and the chronic diseases came back.
Really? How interesting.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, you can look up mind-body connection. We've shown it a couple of times here. Because I was blown away when I saw that little clip. It confirms so much of the research that we've already done.
Yes, I guess that there's a huge difference between a community of loving individuals functioning together and helping each other and, the common scenario nowadays of, like, single mum trying to work and raise children by herself. It's just it's so difficult.
And almost impossible.
That's right.
And in our network, there is a movement towards tribalism, I'm hearing. So,
oh, very much,
you know,
so.
Certainly what we're working towards with self-sustainable living communities and what you're doing. That's the new Earth movement, I think.
I mean, just talking about this makes me feel so warm and fuzzy, dare I say. the idea of people working together as a community, it just feels normal. It feels like coming home. We've lost something very special in our modern societies.
Yeah, I think so.
So, George, could we briefly maybe mention, is it worthwhile mentioning the Ringing Cedars model? Because it sounds like while you're not totally focused on this, it looks like you're taking a lot of those principles. I've read the first book, but I've got the whole series. I must read the rest of it. I guess I was told by a very close friend, Susan Glynn, about this, and I think she's very excited as well about you having this community based on the book. So I understand that the books are, it's a bit of a sort of mystery who this Anastasia figure is that the Russian entrepreneur talks about. From what I remember, he meets this beautiful blonde Anastasia in the wilds of Russia, and is very knowledgeable and wise about the ways of the world and nature and clairvoyant. And I think, is it in the later series of the books that she actually talks about how to set up an intentional community?
Well, I think it's pretty general from that point of view. It does put up quite a number of models.
Right.
One of them in particular is one of the rich entrepreneurs in the US of A who's living a miserable life at the very, very top of the corporate world, decides to divert some of his fortune into a Ringing Cedars style community, and it proceeds from there. In this case, it's just a story, but it does set up the model. Now, I was involved with communicating with quite a number of people on this around Australia and even into the UK, and in the UK, they were complaining that, land's so expensive here, what are we going to do? We just can't get anywhere with this. And I suggested to them, why don't you approach this guy who's puts himself up as a marvelous leader in the world, in the financial and experiential part of the corporate world, and that's Richard Branson. And so on their behalf, I wrote a letter to Virgin Corporate, to Richard Branson.
Good idea.
And that letter is on the internet. It's on our Magpie House Eco Village website. The letter is only about 3 or 4 pages long. and it, it's answering the questionnaire for proposing something innovative to Virgin Corporate. It's basically an economic model that shows that, you know, what I was saying to Richard was, well, you're looking for solutions for the Earth to make it a more viable, more nurturing place. Well, here's an idea. Why don't you get 100 or 200 or 300 hectares of land? It's not going to cost you that much, and attract, say, 100 families to it, and you'll find that within a couple of years, those 100 families will become self-sufficient, and within 5 years, they'll be generating so much homegrown, rich, organic produce. You know, I actually put some figures in there of the return that would be coming from that. And I also suggested to Richard that he can become the nurturing aspect of this to get this started, not to take ownership of these things. In other words, multiply the model over and over and over again throughout the world. It would create a revolution. The basis of this whole thing is that humans are getting replaced by mechanical contraptions, right? Whereas humans can work the earth with their bare hands. This is what Anastasia said. And then the earth can feel every pair of hands and has the courage to carry on. You know, that's what it actually says in one of the books, the one of the Ringing Cedars books.
I read on your website something about that, and I was astounded because it's basically it sounds like the earth is like a living being who can actually feel the life.
Gaia, a living organism, system.
Indigenous culture.
Yeah.
Wow. And look, I'm so curious. Did he respond?
Virgin, I sent it to Virgin Corporate Asia and Virgin Corporate UK, and I got the letter back from Asia, and they rejected the idea. I was rather sad.
Oh, dear. Have you tried some other millionaires, like Dick Smith?
I came to the conclusion we're going to have to do this ourselves. Even though Richard Branson puts himself up as the benevolent corporation do-gooder, his corporate arm wasn't prepared to act on this. I've thought about following it up, but I'm not sure. We've got land to do this, 700 hectares.
I think he deserves a bit of a spanking. Maybe we should get him on our show.
I don't know. Yeah, but it sounds like build it, they will come, though.
Maybe. Yeah. George, can I ask you, do you think Anastasia is a real person?
Anastasia says, I exist for whom I exist. In other words, it's up to you.
It's up to God.
Does it really matter whether she exists or not?
I'm
curious.
Yeah, it's the same as in the Castaneda books. Does Don Juan, the main benefactor character in that. Does he exist? We don't know.
You know what? Something interesting. I heard an astral traveler once say that he traveled into an alternate reality or the past, and he said the Buddha actually did not exist. And I know that would be heresy to say that, and I'm not saying I believe that, but does it even matter? The Buddha's consciousness exists, just like the Christ consciousness. So who It's the energy and the idea that exists that's really important.
Yeah. If the information is powerful, does it really matter?
Not at all. I totally agree with you on that. If you're not worshiping the Buddha, you're practicing what the Buddha taught. And so I guess that's what's really important, is that carrying out those principles and living that life of kindness and those values and beliefs and things that are really important in the world and to us.
And of course, the Buddha, the historical Buddha, but there are many Buddhas.
Right, true enough.
It's we can all be the Buddha, so it's almost like a template for perhaps the mode of existence that you have.
Right.
Yeah. That's what gives it reality, belief. Yeah. That's the faith. You know, the faith will move mountains. It doesn't matter whether it's real or not.
If the Buddha had not done anything, would we have remembered him? You know what I mean? It's sort of like it's what he did that we remember and that we carry on with. So it's that it's very, the person itself has less significance. I don't know. It's an interesting thing that you need to think about.
So George, as you know, we're very interested in your community, and I love the name Ethereum ringing Cedars community. Why Ethereum?
Oh, Ethereum in Greek, because I've got a Greek heritage, means divine. My mother helped me pick the name, and I love the name.
Nice, yeah.
It sets up energy. We even came up with the idea that instead of money, we could have ethereal dollars.
Oh, love.
A little local currency.
I do like that, because David and I have been looking into all the different international communities and very interested
systems of exchange and...
Yeah, and very interested in Michael Tillinger's work and Michael Tillinger's Ubuntu system, contributionism, and actually removing money completely, because he thinks money's the big poison.
Maybe, but we also, when we went to Narara Village, I know they're talking about developing some kind of a local currency, and they're having a meeting sometime this month or next that, discussing that with financial professionals to see what they can do with that. So,
but I think it takes it out of the hands of bankers and puts it back into the hands of the people is the right way to go.
Right.
Well, the idea of ethereal dollars, you know, being ethereal, it's not, you acknowledge that it's not real. Right. It's only a more form of transfer. It's an energy where we can use for exchange. And so that's what it is. It's ethereal. So we came up with that idea as a to make it a little bit more lighthearted. Why do we take this?
How would that work?
I don't know. You got some ideas?
Did you have physical currency? I mean, money is just a money is a concept, anyhow.
It's ethereal. It's not of this world.
So
like spiritual money.
Would there be something actually physical to exchange? Because, I mean, money has no value anyhow. It's just physical currency until you give it value. I mean, the energy of money is a concept. So it sounds like what you're saying.
Yeah, we take it a little bit too seriously. And if you look at the events happening in Greece, you know, we do actually live in a world where money makes the world go round. But what if we were to change that vision or that thought that I was talking about earlier? How about we make it change the world and say love is what makes the world go round? Then you could have to assume that Greece is abundant. Different way of looking at things. Instead of money banks, we would have love banks where we can make a deposit or withdrawal. Who are we anyway? Are we beings of love or lovers of money? And I have to say now, on the whole, we are lovers of money, which means we have to subject ourselves to these rules of austerity. It's a cruel situation, but it's necessary.
It is. Money becomes the master rather than the other way around. And we're the ones creating the money. We're the ones putting forth the effort to create that money. It's not the other way around. So there's something not quite right with what's going on, especially in Greece. And, you know, it's just...
What a lovely idea to have a money bank and do withdrawals and perhaps deposits. I love that.
These are ideas that we need to start really thinking about. And it's great to be creative with these ideas and talk about these things and exchange, share thoughts with us and really explore it, because this is the time to do it.
And George, course, our listeners are both in Australia, and we have an international audience, especially in the US. Are you interested in perhaps inviting any interested parties along? I think you're going to be having a meeting soon in September, or interested in joining the community, would you like them to just sort of write in and express their interest?
Yeah, we're down in Melbourne, Victoria. The community land is in New South Wales, and it's not on the hinterland, it's not on the coast, it's up onto the tablelands. It's magnificent area for land. And we specifically chose such an area. We didn't want to be in high population pressure areas, you know, along the coast and the hinterland. It's wonderful to be down in the tropical regions, but it's kind of seductive, right? And it's also where the corporation influence will be. And the corporate influence is basically trying to take over our lives completely. The governments themselves, you might agree or disagree with this idea. The governments themselves have been taken over by private interests. This is pretty much true. And so the definition of a government controlled by private interests is fascist. So we're living in a fascist, going towards dictatorship.
I'd say that's true in most countries, or if not all, probably almost all world governments.
Also, you know, just on that point, we're also going into a technological singularity where technology is becoming so powerful in our lives that eventually we're going to have to merge with machines. This is what the transhumanist people.
I think there's some truth to that with artificial intelligence and drones and everything that's happening. And I've heard this, that soon artificial intelligence will actually take over. I don't know, but possibly it could be like the Matrix. I mean, it is like the Matrix now, but it could literally be like the Matrix.
Who knows? I want to run away.
sometimes I have, you know, Siri sort of arguments with Siri iPhone, so I don't know.
That's actually quite frightening. You know, Georgia. David has a very strange relationship with Siri on his iPhone. Every so often, Siri will just start talking. And once, I think my daughter must have had something to do with what she recorded, but all of a sudden, Siri said, "I'm going to murder you."
David. Out of nowhere. Sometimes Siri, the phone will be sitting on my tabletop, and it'll just start talking out of nowhere all of a sudden. And I'll say, "Excuse me, Siri, I didn't invite you to speak. You know, you're not invited to this conversation. It's getting a little bit personal."
Well,
we're going to have to wrap up soon. So, George, the land sounds absolutely beautiful, and it's virgin, pristine land, isn't it? And it covers lots of different terrain.
Yeah. Look, if people are interested, the school holidays in both Victoria and New South Wales are coinciding. We could invite people up for a gathering, and so they can look us up on magpiehouse.com.au, send us a message. It doesn't matter where they are, it can be Australia-wide or even international, and we could nurture some sort of gathering. I'm working on the idea of building a special retreat there, for yoga, for empowerment, inviting people, building a decent conference centre, and seeing where that goes.
Oh, that'd be very exciting. And I've seen lots of videos and pictures of people building like earthships together out of mud bricks and
excellent
and tires. And
wow,
it's amazing what you can do. You know, it really is amazing. So really look forward to doing that. And you know, inviting our listeners throughout the world to look up Magpie House.
Yeah, absolutely. Take an interest, this is the way to go. This is the New Earth movement. It's a pioneering movement, and you're at the head of it. And
thank you so much, George. Lovely to have
guest.
You on the show. And
thank you.
Goodbye to everyone from Universal Soul Love. This is Lana Love.
And David Love.
Bye.
We'll see you next time. Thanks, George.
Bye-bye.